लाइट कैमरा
रोलिंग
एक्शन।
वेलकम टू माय पॉडकास्ट लेट्स टॉक अबाउट वर्टिकल्स, अ प्लेस वेयर सीक्रेट्स आर स्पिल्ड, स्टोरीज अनफोल्ड एंड द मिस्टीरियस वर्ल्ड ऑफ वर्टिकल्स इज रिवील्ड इन ऑल इट्स ग्लोरी। Behind the scenes? Oh yes. Exclusive insights? Absolutely. Eccentric characters? You bet. So, pull up a chair, pour yourself something suspiciously strong, and prepare for a conversation you didn't know you needed. So, welcome to the podcast Let's Talk About Verticals. And now, let's talk. Hello and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk About Verticals. Today we speak to a person. I was very interested in reading this. He loves riding roller coaster, I read. Me too. So we have to talk about that seriously.
Yes,
and
okay.
He told me that he is ancestry in Poland, so not so far from my home country. And we also spoke a few things about him modeling in Milan, where I live. So I see we could have a great connection. So let's find it out if we connect. And I say hello to TJ Wick. Welcome to my podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Michaela, right? Is that how you say your name?
No.
That's how we say it in America.
No.
What is
it? I know that you say it in America, but yeah. No, the correct pronunciation is Michaela. It's not with the K. Michaela,
because I have a niece.
No,
here.
Not the sh. It's not yeah. Michaela. It's Michaela.
Michaela.
English speaking people have a lot of problem with the sh. Only German speaking people pronounce regularly my name correct. If you want to try your colleagues, for example, Elijah Van Zanten tried it 30 minutes to speak it correctly, and then he gave up. So
that's funny. Yeah, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to get it right.
Till the end. You have 1 hour time from now.
I have 1 hour. Michaela.
No. You say Michaela. It's it's a more flat. Michaela. You have to say it very soft. No, you say it very hard. You have to say it soft. Michaela.
Michaela.
No, not a sh. Not a sh. Michaela.
Israel.
And then when you have my first name, we can get over to my second name. Then you have a next problem.
Oh boy! All right.
So let's keep it Michaela. It's fine. I get used to it.
No, I want to say it right, Michaela. Michaela.
No, not Michaela.
Michaela.
No, Misha. A very soft.
Michaela.
Shall we do it now? 1 hour? Really?
No.
I will send you a sound file later with the correct pronunciation.
Okay. Then, to me, it sounds right, but
when you are flying over to New York, you can train it.
Yeah, I'll practice it. I'll practice it. Because I do have a niece here named Michaela, so I can call her pronounced
Michaela.
Name correctly in German.
Michaela.
Michaela.
No, you're saying Michaela. You're saying with a sh. Michaela. Yeah. Yeah, and it's Mish. It's not a sh, it's a sh. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's very soft. Michaela.
Michaela. Is that better?
Yeah.
Michaela. Okay.
You're on the right way.
There's progress.
You are on the right way.
I'm going to learn it. Okay.
Normally, I would say you have to drink a beer and then you can pronounce it mostly correctly with kind of alcohol, but in your case you told me with the eggnog, maybe with the brandy, or what was it, brandy or whiskey in it?
Yeah, brandy and eggnog.
And then you can try it again and then
I'll
send me
right.
A sound file, Michaela, then it's perfect. I'm sure it's perfect because you know the muscles here are then a bit more
relaxed.
Mm-hmm. That's needed for my name.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So for me to speak German, I have to be drunk. All right.
Maybe. That's maybe why we have the Oktoberfest here in Germany.
You have so many, exactly. Yeah, that's your big thing there.
I've never been to the Oktoberfest, to be honest. And it's
really?
Only 2 hours away from here. I don't drink alcohol. What should I do at the Oktoberfest?
Well, yeah, that makes sense then.
And it's very loud in the tents.
I'm sure.
Because all the tourists came over from all over the world. There are so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And they you know what the most problem is? That all the tourist people are not good in beer drinking, in this kind of beer we German have. The German beer is very strong.
Uh-huh.
In alcohol.
So they just slam it down.
And on the Oktoberfest, you get the 1 liter glasses. One liter beer.
Oh my God, like your water bottle.
Yes.
That's all beer. Yeah.
And they drink it too fast with too much alcohol. What?
I said, if I had 2 sips of that beer, I would be wasted. I am not, I'm a very light drinker. I don't drink really. I mean, I'll drink on a special occasion, like a glass of champagne or a glass of wine with a really nice dinner. But outside that, I'm not drinking.
And to be honest, you don't have really body fat where you can compensate the alcohol.
There's that too. Yeah, there's that too.
When I'm not wrong, as I see your training videos, I'm kind of jealous.
Look, it's just consistent hard work.
Yeah,
and
I know.
What's interesting about that, you know, being in the gym and transforming your body, the moment you start to see these changes, it immediately becomes addicting.
Yeah, and keeps motivating doing that.
Yeah, it's self-motivating.
Yeah, that's good. Best.
Yeah, it's the best.
I mean, there's a lot of people that love going to the gym. I love to it. But right at the moment, you know, with the ribs, it's kind of...
Right, yeah, you can't really do a lot. Yeah, you got to be careful. Yeah, a lot of people go to the gym because they're motivated by what somebody else looks like. And that's maybe a good start. But once you start getting in there, it really is about you. You versus you. Not you versus that other person. Because you're a completely different person. Completely different.
Okay, so question. How did you arrange your day life when you are on set with doing also gym? I think you're going every day to gym, right?
I try to, I'm in the gym 5 to 6 days a week, typically six. But when it comes to production, obviously everything changes because normally I like to work out in the early mid-afternoon when the gyms are not that. So I have access to all the equipment for the most part and I can do whatever I want without having to wait or change anything. Yeah. But when I'm on set, I'm in the gym pretty much the same thing. Like I'm in there at a time where it's not busy because I have to be there either at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. when it's not busy.
So you're going before the shooting, not after?
I like to. Yeah, I prefer that because it sounds crazy, but when I get a really good workout in, my body and everything is more awake. I'm more aware. I feel better. If I go at the end of the day, I'm already tired because I've exhausted all of my energy into that, whatever it was I was doing that day. In this case, making a movie. So I'm tired. I'm emotionally tired. I'm physically tired. But in the beginning of the day, the first thing I do when I get up, if I have a movie, is I'm going to go to the gym because I want to show up awake and ready and more emotionally.
And question now for the women.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Does your body look better if you have a shirtless scene? When you were already working out in the morning?
Yeah, you got a good pump. Sure. But you have to be careful because sometimes, you know, when you work out, especially like if you do like a heavy leg day or a back day, these are big muscle groups on your body. So you're going to be a lot more tired. You're going to be a lot more hungry. So you have to be careful and be aware of what are you eating after you work out? Because there's items of food you can eat that will bloat you out. So it completely defeats the purpose. If you know you're going to have a shirtless scene, and you got to have ripped abs for the scene, or at least you really want to. But if you're eating bread, donuts, pancakes.
Are you eating donuts? Are you not on a special diet?
I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. No, I am on a special nutrition program for sure.
Yeah, that's what.
But I do like to indulge in eating all the bad stuff too. But I do it, again, it's just strategizing. Like I will never do that when I know I'm about to get on set and make a movie, let alone do it while I'm making a movie. I'll do it after, you know, if I know I'm going to have a 2 to 3 week break or something.
Yeah.
Indulge. Sure. Absolutely. I'll have ice cream, cake, pancakes, burgers, fries, milkshakes, you name it. Chocolate cake, chocolate. I'll eat anything. But when it's time for me to work, I can shut all that off cold turkey and just focus on what I know works for my body to get back into that top shape. But
Yeah.
I'm never out of shape. Like I've never not had a six pack, but that's because of my training and my daily regimen. So I always want to be camera ready. That's always been my goal, physically, is to always be camera ready. And I learned that when I was fashion modeling. You know, like a lot of my jobs were bathing suits, underwear campaigns. A lot of my jobs, I was shirtless, even if it was a campaign for like a Italian high-end brand of some kind. I always was the guy that didn't have the shirt on because I was in good shape, and that's the way I wanted to be. I wanted to be that guy. So for me, it was part of my job to make sure that I'm always in my top shape. But yes, I indulge.
That's good to know. You know, because sometimes all these people are look alike, so 2000% discipline, 365 days per year, and I really wondering, don't they
But a
never
lot of people get it
ever?
wrong too. A lot of people that I know that are in great shape are miserable because they're not eating, they're not giving their body the right nutrients that it needs to function properly, and that will negatively affect your performance. It'll negatively affect your energy,
No.
your food, mood especially. You know, if your brain is not fed, if your muscles and body aren't fed, you're just going to be kind of out of it and frustrated and tired and annoyed and, you know, all of these things that work against you. So you really got to be aware of what nutrients your body needs and when and how much to eat. It's a whole calculated thing when it comes to nutrition. It's very important, but a lot of
Are
people get
you
it wrong.
still doing some modeling jobs, or did the acting stuff take over?
I'm primarily focused as an actor now. I had a great modeling career. I did stuff I never even imagined I would do in my career. Worked with incredible talent and photographers. So, and when I was doing that, it was at the height of the modeling business. And now it's not the same business. Big brands have sold out to hedge fund companies. So they're not spending money on advertising anymore. They don't really care much about the quality of the stitching or even the fabrics. A lot of these brands aren't made in Italian anymore or in America. They're made in China or they're made in India. They're made in Bangladesh. They're made somewhere, Vietnam. The Philippines, somewhere else where it's just not the same quality. And all they care about is making money, but cutting costs. So the advertising spending on these big brands aren't what they used to be. And the magazine industry is dead too. That died back in 2008, 2009, and it's never really recovered. So everything's online now. Instagram, Facebook. So they don't need to, you know, they'll hire like a guy that's got a million followers that isn't necessarily a professional fashion model, but because he has such a following, they're going to pay that guy and he'll take it because he needs the $5,000 or 10,000, whatever. It's usually around 3 to 5,000. Back in the day when there were magazines and there were major photographers that were shooting the big campaigns, models would be paid up to 100,000 or more, you know, and 20,000 a day or 25, 30, 50,000 a day. Like it was an incredible time. And I was a part of, you know, that time frame when the business was good. So now it's like it's frustrating that it's not the same industry.
So
It's
it's
not
not
as
any attractive anymore for you, or?
not really. I mean, I've done commercials. Like I've done six commercials in the last 2 years, a lot of them for cars, motorcycles, which has been fun, but it's not high fashion. You know, it's commercial. I miss the high fashion. I miss the sexy, creative, beautiful ads. You know, now you look at something online, you're not really like, oh, wow, that's beautiful. It's just like, eh. You know, the colors, that's not as bright. The idea behind the photography isn't as interesting. There's nothing really creative to me. It all just seems very cookie cutter. It's already been done. Back in my day when I was, you know, doing the magazine kind of stuff and on billboards, we were shooting like really creative, inventful, very physically demanding type of photographs. You know, I was always moving. I was a very physical model. I was never was the guy that would like to stand on an X and pose. I was the guy jumping across the screen, making a shape, or jumping in the air, or, you know, doing something physical because movement is beautiful. It's sexy. And if you can get it done in a good way and look good on camera, takes a lot of practice, but you do it right, you're gonna work. At least back in those days, and when it actually was something that people really liked. and gravitated towards. I worked a lot, but it's just so different now.
And when did you switch to the acting stuff? Or
I
when
switched.
did acting get interesting for you?
Sure. So I actually got very interested in acting when I was in college. I had a full ride scholarship for springboard diving to be in the Olympics. And
Oh.
I, yeah, and this was a very serious sport. Like if you're not focused, you can literally die. You can have traumatic injuries, break your neck, break your back.
And
You
you
know, yeah.
did that?
What's that?
And you did that?
Yeah, I was doing those kind of dives. Oh yeah, it got very dangerous. But I started paying attention to modeling, like Mark Wahlberg as an example.
Yeah.
He did the Calvin Klein campaign with Kate Moss.
I
That
know.
changed my life. Yeah. And I was like, that is a beautiful picture. He's got a great physique. It's a physique that I was looking to try to get as a springboard diver. I didn't have it. I was like, I look like Kermit the Frog in a Speedo. That's what I look like. And I'm not kidding. I did. I was very
I like
skinny.
Kermit the Frog.
Who doesn't? But it's not attractive in a Speedo, you
I
know. Now,
know
granted,
the
I
owner
was
of
very.
Speedo, by the way.
Yeah, I
He
did their
had
campaign in 2007.
the owner of Speedo had from I had another dog who died in October at the age of age. At the age of eight, sorry. And the owner of Speedo had a brother of my dog who died, and
Oh, wow.
the owner of Speedo also owned a few parts of Nike,
Oh,
and
okay.
his dog was called Nike.
That's funny.
Yeah, sorry for
No,
interrupting. Just came into my
no.
mind the Speedo.
But yeah, I actually did their campaign in 2007. I couldn't believe
Okay.
it because Speedo were obviously the bathing suits we wore when we were competing in diving. And I never imagined in a million years I would ever actually do an advertisement for Speedo. So
Did you
that
felt a
was
bit
like,
honored to do that?
yes, because again, I was just a skinny, weak kid on a springboard diving, wearing a Speedo, you know, performing these difficult acrobatic tricks, which I was
Yeah.
good at, you know, and it was great. I worked hard to achieve what I did, but I always wanted to have a great physique in a bathing suit because I knew that women liked that stuff. I mean, the movies, you know, you always had these guys that were shirtless that were in great shape. And all of the models, like, you know, at that time, a lot of those guys were in great shape and I wanted to have that body. And then I saw again, like I said, Mark Wahlberg, and he was the guy that had, I think, the best physique at that time, of any Calvin Klein model I've ever seen. And so I'm like, that I want to really try to do that. And he inspired me, along with a few fitness guys that were on the magazines in those days, became people that I admired and wanted to try and build that physique. So I put myself in the gym a lot. My concentration veered away from springboard diving and more into the modeling side of things and even acting. Like I realized, oh, Mark Wahlberg is acting. So he was doing like Basketball Diaries. These are his very early films.
I know. I
Yeah,
saw them.
Fear.
I liked his
Boogie
earlier
Nights.
movies more than the late ones, to be
Yeah,
honest.
I do too. Well, what's interesting is, you know, I felt like he took the business a lot more seriously as a creative artist. Now he's worth tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. He's got an empire. He's a business guy now. He's very business. So acting isn't his number one focus. At that time, it really was. He didn't have any businesses. There were no, you know, supplement brand deals coming to him. You know, like for proteins and all that stuff, or clothing brands. He was just strictly trying to make it as a successful movie star. And he took the job very seriously. He was in acting class, he studied, like he really worked on his craft. So,
Did you
yeah. So
also take acting classes?
I did, yes. I started my acting classes when I moved to to LA in 2003.
Okay.
And it was in a really good school. James Franco was in my class, Scott Kahn, Ashley Judd. We had a guy named Paul Sorvino come in and talk about his work. He was one of the great actors that was in a lot of the mob movies, like Goodfellas, one of the best mob movies ever made. So we had a lot of great talent that would come in through that school. Ashley Judd was one of the big students there. She was very busy as an actress. So I came from a school that really taught good acting. And that made me even more alive to want to learn about the craft. I wasn't great though at auditioning because I didn't know how to memorize lines. They didn't teach us that in this class. And I was in this
Okay.
class for a good 3.5, 4 years. I
And
learned
they
how to
didn't
act on
teach you
stage.
that?
No, it's a technique that you learn on how to memorize lines.
Yeah.
I learned it. And I didn't like reading, which when you're an actor, that's 95% of your job is reading and memorizing and understanding the text and the story and who you are and your relationship with the other people in the story. You got to read about that and figure it out. I didn't really grow up being a strong reader. In fact, in first grade, I was held back because I couldn't read. And I was always embarrassed about that. So, and I didn't enjoy reading. There was nothing that I was reading in grade school or even college that really made me want to learn how to read until I started taking acting classes because now I'm interested in this particular industry. So I would read the biographies and the autobiographies of like the great directors, the great actors, the studio era, the golden era of films back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then I would want to read up about Robert De Niro, Al Pacino,
Al
Marlon Brando, Jack
Pacino.
Nicholson, all of these great actors. So my interest really grew and my passion grew. So I became a very good avid reader, but I still didn't know how to memorize lines. So when I go to audition, I would do a terrible job. Even though I could act on stage, I'm good off one to one. Like I'm not afraid to express my true emotions moment to moment. I was never afraid of that. What I was afraid of is, can I read the text well and can I memorize my lines and say what I'm supposed to say perfectly? And I didn't know how to do that. And that was always in my head. So I was a really bad auditioner. But it didn't mean I was a bad actor because in acting class, I come in and work off somebody, and the teacher would be like, TJ. And this is a guy, again, this is a guy that taught Ashley Judd, James Franco. He would say to me, TJ, if this was on camera, what you just did up there would be nominated for an Academy Award. You would be nominated.
Oh,
And that's like,
that's
that's great to hear
great.
from a teacher. And I'm
Absolutely.
and outside of class, I'm like, why can't I be like this in an audition? Why can't I do this? And I wouldn't book work. I just wouldn't book anything. I got busy as a model, which was great. It made me a lot of money. It gave me a lot of exposure. But I had no confidence because as an actor, because I didn't know how to memorize lines. So I'm in this class for 4 years and I kind of got frustrated. I'm like, you know what? And my modeling career really took off. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is what I'm supposed to really do. And honestly, it's what brought me out to Los Angeles anyways, was modeling. Because I wanted the Calvin Klein campaign. I wanted to be the Calvin Klein model. And I almost got it back in 2004. I was like this close. It was between me and the guy that actually got it. The guy that had a baby with Halle Berry. It was between me and him. They weren't, they wanted to go with a more boyish look, which is what I was. I looked really young. Or did they want to go with a more mature look, which of course he had a more mature, manly look. And Calvin Klein would go either way. Some campaigns he'd shoot a young guy, guys, he'd shoot young, older guys. So in this particular case, they wanted to go with a guy that had a more mature look. And it was a 3-year buyout. It was a $1 million a year contract. So I would have made $3 million.
Holy moly.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be allowed to do anything else. It was just only Calvin Klein. But it didn't matter. Like that was my
Exclusive.
goal as a model anyways, to get that campaign. But just to even be that close to it to me is like maybe mission achieved, that I even had their attention. Again, coming from a guy that was just a skinny little kid in a Speedo that had no to then be inspired by Mark Wahlberg doing Calvin Klein. And then there I am in New York for a week trying to get this job from Calvin Klein. It's surreal. It was
That's
really
a
surreal.
really great achievement.
Yeah. It was great. And then I have such a strange background. I don't even know where to go in telling you all this because so many amazing things were happening in my life at this particular time. Even though I didn't get Calvin Klein, I worked part-time here in LA to pay the bills as a nanny or a Manny for a guy I mentioned in our talk before the podcast, my friend Bill Dorfman, who was the dentist on Extreme Makeover for all 5 seasons. He had three daughters. And they were very young. The twins were 5 and the oldest was 9, almost 10. So he had three girls. And I was hired to work with them. And he chose me because his nanny at the time was going overseas to do some kind of missions trip. And he had no idea when she was going to come back. But because I met Bill in the gym and I work out, we became really good friends. And then he asked me one day, hey, why don't you come with me and my family on a water skiing trip? We like to water ski. I don't know if you're into it. I'm like, yeah, that sounds fun. And I hung out with his kids and we had so much fun. And he realized that I'm like a kid His kids really liked me because I was very playful and silly and fun. And so one day he's like, "Dude, I don't know if you know any girls in your acting class, but do you know anyone that would be interested in being the nanny to my girls? Because my nanny's leaving." And I said, "Does it have to be a girl?" And he goes, "No. Why? What are your thoughts?" I said, "Why don't I do it? Because I'm familiar with the kids. I love hanging out with them. I know your schedule. I've been to your house many times. It would be an easy transition for
Yeah,
this." And
there's enough
honestly,
trust.
yeah, right. So he said, "That sounds good to me." So I did it for 3 years exclusively. So Calvin Klein comes up while I'm the nanny. He's obviously all supportive about it. He's a successful TV dentist, but he is a legitimate dentist. But he understands Hollywood and fame, and a lot of his clients, his patients were very famous people. I mean, I don't even know where to go. Jessica Simpson. I mean, you name the movie star, the rock star, he was their dentist. It was crazy. You go into his office and like Ozzy Osbourne would be there, just sitting to be waiting to be seen by Bill. And next to Ozzy Osbourne was like some other major star. And you're like, what is happening? But yeah, my life was crazy. So I go to New York, I come back, I didn't get it. Bill calls me. I was living in the pool house on his property in Beverly Hills. So I had a really nice, luxurious kind of experience at that time. And he goes, "So did you get it?" He was all excited. I said, "No, Bill, I didn't." He goes, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know. I'm really just depressed. I really feel like maybe that's because I didn't get what I wanted. So maybe I should be doing something else." He goes, "No, you shouldn't. In fact, in my dentist chair right now, I have you on speaker, is a woman named Janice Dickinson. She's the first female supermodel. She's starting a reality TV show about modeling. I showed her your pictures. She wants you to come into my office and meet her and maybe have you on her show." And I'm like, "Who's Janice Dickinson?" And he has me on speaker. And Janice is like, "Who's Janice Dickinson? Who the hell are you? Get over here now. Get over here now." She was a very famous supermodel from like the 80s, you know? Everybody knew who she was, and she did everything with everybody. Like, she was incredible. So I go to the office, and of course she sees me. And because I was depressed, I showed up wearing my, I think it was my Superman flannel pajamas bottoms, a white tank top. That's how I came to this, what you could call a job interview, right? Or a casting for a television show. So she immediately sees me. She already knows I can model because Bill showed her my photos and I had some pretty but to show up like that to an interview and a possibility to be on a hit show, she just gave me this look of death. She's like, "Are you fucking kidding me?
Kidding
You're gonna
me?
come to an interview dressed like that? Give me your book." I came with my book. She goes, "All right, look, you can clearly model. I want you on my show. But don't ever dress like this to an interview. You got balls. I like it. You got a good attitude, but you cannot show up to an interview like this. You should always come your best dressed, best prepared." And I'm like, "Understood." She goes, "But you're on my show. Congratulations." I'm like, "Okay." Ended up being in 67 countries. We were the most watched reality show in the history of television at that time. I did a lot of work. I was her busiest, male model. So I got to actually experience what it's like to work on a TV show. Even though it was reality based, it was more a docu-series. It wasn't like they were throwing us fake scenarios and see what happens. It was like we were legitimately going on these castings. We were legitimately booking the jobs, and they would document what it was like to work. It was great. It was so much fun. And then they wanted to go into more trash TV where they wanted to get interested in what the models were doing if they weren't working. Can we set them up with dates and at nightclubs? And that wasn't really anything I was interested in because I worked as a nanny and my audience, and they showcased about 2.5 minutes of me doing that on the show. And I ultimately started doing these talk shows, these really famous talk shows here in America, almost all of them, about me working as a nanny while also being a fashion model, because that was very interesting. That was different. Most models are bartenders or waiters or strippers or something. Not I was a nanny. So they thought that was a very interesting, compelling, and sweet story. So I had this different kind of thing happening. And even though I couldn't act, I was getting offers from some of the top film management people in the world, guys that represented Denzel Washington, Julia Roberts, that level. And I'd come into their office and they'd have me read for like the big, supporting lead role in a huge movie by Ethan and Joel Coen, the remake of True Grit. I read for one of the main character supporting roles in Gran Torino to play the priest, which is a movie that was directed by Clint Eastwood. So I had those kind of auditions, even though I had zero experience as an actor, other than being in acting class. They just brought me in because of my success on TV shows and being in the covers of magazines and doing like all these great campaigns for huge brands, you know. At one point, I had two billboards in Times Square at the same time, which no male model has ever done. I'm the first male model to ever have that happen to, which was great. But it didn't really count towards my experience, of course, being an actor. That's a whole different animal. And so I'd come in and read, and I just didn't do a good job. And it got frustrating. So I kind of gave up on, I'm going to be an actor. But then COVID hits years later. Here we are in COVID. I'm working as a personal trainer. I have a very successful business. I'm still doing modeling. I'm still working more in the fitness genre of things. Like I've done big campaigns for, fitness brands and like supplement brands and things like that. And it was great, but I wasn't happy. It was nice, like transforming people's lives in the gym. That was very rewarding on a lot of levels. But I wasn't satisfied with my career. I really watched movies, missing being in acting class, missing trying to be an actor, because I enjoyed that very much. Like you discover a lot about yourself when you're playing a character and really living out those scenarios. I don't really want to call it playing a character because it is me legitimately. It's my voice, it's my expression, it's me expressing, right? These different scenarios that you have to live out truthfully. And I really miss that and love that. So a friend of mine who also was one of my personal training clients was a big casting director named Paul Ruddy. He was a big casting director at the time for a lot of Lifetime movies, Hallmark Channel films. And he said to me, TJ, you have such a good look and you have such a great attitude. You're smart, you're in incredible shape. Why don't you get back into acting? I know a great acting teacher that would really help you with your skills. And, be in this class for like a year and then I'll bring you in and have you read for, one of my characters and get you on a movie. And I'm like, okay. So I
I'm
enroll back in
in.
this acting class. And it's a completely different class, same kind of technique, but a different teacher. And I'm in this class for about 2 years. And I'm finally learning, because of the technique that they taught us, how to memorize lines. And this was the missing link for me. And I start trusting the process of this technique, and I start getting really good at memorizing lines. And I'm, in class, just practicing that skill. I didn't audition at all. I was just in class for about 2, 2.5 years. And then I finally felt like once the teacher was consistently saying to me, TJ, great job. We don't need to see a different version of that. You're good. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm ready to audition. So I start auditioning. And the very first thing I ever auditioned for was a vertical film. And I didn't know what verticals were. I just saw that it was an audition for one.
When was
And
this
this was
roundabout?
in 2023.
Okay, so when the verticals early stage,
Yes, when they
told early
started.
stage.
There may have been about 25 or 30 vertical films made in America at that point. Maybe less, but it was like around that, between 25 and 30. So there weren't that many of them. I didn't know what it was. I saw a vertical. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but okay, maybe that's the name of the production company or something. But to me, like an audition's an audition. Doesn't matter if it's widescreen, vertical, or if you're going in for a play. An audition's an audition. You're going to perform and just try to live it out as truthfully as you possibly can, moment to moment. So that's ultimately what I did because that's what I was learned and taught in class, along with memorizing lines. So I did this audition. I got the part. It was a lead role to play a werewolf. And that was the beginning of my actual acting career. And I'm really glad I waited almost 2.5 years before I auditioned because I really wanted to be good. I wanted to understand what I was learning and be great, not just good, but great at memorizing lines and go in confidently. Not having to worry about what is my line because I know it. It's hard to memorize and put in the work. And so, yeah.
What was the title of your first vertical you did? Do you know
It
that?
was called Her Desired Alphas. And it's still up and running, I believe, on RealShort.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so bad in titles. I cannot tell you how many verticals I've watched till now because I started watching verticals at the end of 2023. And
That's when they
since
started to blow up.
then, a lot of verticals came across my way. And the
Yeah.
titles sometimes the title sounds so familiar. Sometimes always it's with a heiress or with a billionaire or CEO somewhere in the title. So don't ask me exactly titles for the shows because.
Right. Well, there are so many apps out there now too, because when I got in this business, there were like three or four that were, Real Short was like the main one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That
Real
was like
Short
the
was
first.
The first that got me in, because in an advertising, my first membership ever was on Real Short.
Yeah. They were the first. And then all these other ones started to show up. And now all these apps are basically making the same exact films.
Do you know how many apps roundabout there are out there at the moment?
If I had to guess, there's probably like 50.
I have only 52 on my smartphone, and I am not the one with the most. I spoke to a lot with more than I have on my smartphone.
Wow.
And that's a problem, this huge amount of platforms, because lately they're popping up with every kind of new show. It feels like a new platform pops also up. And the thing is, for the audience, the shitty thing is, there is maybe one, two shows on this platform you want to watch, but you have to purchase every time a membership, all the kind stuff. And the membership, for example, here in Germany, a weekly membership is round about 25 to 35 euros for one week.
For one week.
Yes. Oh, wow. We are talking about 1 week.
That's outrageous.
Yes, it's more like a monthly Netflix abo.
It's even more than that.
Yeah.
Netflix, HBO, Showtime, all those, they're not that expensive.
Yeah. And that's only for one platform. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? People are only going to pay what they see the value in for it. So until people stop paying it, they'll have
That. Because when I started watching Verticals, as you said, there were the main platforms like Drummerbox.
Yeah.
Real Short. Good Kalos Short. Yeah, but Kalos TV long had, I think Kalos TV offered 4 weeks ago for the first time, really a membership. Till then, for every show, you have to buy coins. And if you have to buy coins for every show, one show costs me round about 60 euros to watch. I was not willing to pay that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's way more than a movie ticket.
For 60 euros, you can go a few times to cinema to watch a movie.
And get dinner.
So that's kind of, do you have, or do you prefer some platforms you're working for? Because you said, the production team was so great, or.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, like my experience, because I have now made probably 24 of these movies now.
Yeah.
And I play the lead in maybe 22 of them now. I played supporting in only two of the movies. I've been very lucky and very blessed. But every single experience I've had on every movie I've made in this genre has been amazing. Mm-hmm. So I don't particularly have like a favorite. They've all been good to me. They've all paid on time. They've all put out their movies in a reasonable amount of time, because some of them take longer to edit. Sometimes there's, you know, production issues we as actors have no control over. Once the movie's done, we have no control. So it's really,
you
on
don't
the production
even know sometimes when it drops, right?
Right.
For example, I spoke with Kirby Elwood, and she said, sometimes I read the first review and say, oh, is it out? Okay.
Yeah, they don't announce to us. The only way I know it's come out is if I look myself, or if a fan has contacted me and said, hey, your latest movie, I love it. And I'm like, huh? That's good. It came out.
Okay.
Let me see if there's anything there that I can pull from, you know, from my reel and add to what I've already done. But there is one movie that I did this year in March in China, in Zhuhai, China, that has yet to come out. I actually just talked to the guy last night because I'm like, when is this movie releasing? And he was the personal assistant to the director.
Okay.
That I contacted. And he goes, well, I reached out to the app. I didn't even know what app it was on. It's Mini Shorts. And he said, there's nothing wrong with the movie. It just hasn't released yet. And I'm like, but we made this movie in March. Like, what's the holdup? Like, interesting that they would wait this long to launch this movie. And I remember the storyline. It was beautiful. And it was a very luxurious, gorgeous, like whole film, and it's got a good storyline, and everybody, I remember, like, everybody worked well together. The actresses were great. It was just such a great time.
Who was
I've
the
been waiting for
female
this movie.
lead? Who was
What's
your
that?
co-star? Who was your co-star in it?
I forget. This was many, many movies ago. I'm blanking on the lead actress's name. We were all flown in from the States to play
Okay,
the
so
main.
all from the US. Okay.
Both the one of the leads was from LA, the other was from New York.
Okay.
I'll get back to you on that,
Do
on who they
that.
were. I'm just, man, my brain is not good right now. I need to eat.
You can
Anyways,
memorizing text, but not your co-stars now.
well, I know their names, but it's just like, oh, it's been a long time ago. They all, it all
It's
kind of
fine.
runs together sometimes. Because I'm always also just so concentrated on my next project and what I'm going to be doing. So I've been very focused on that right now too. Just a
That's
lot
fine.
happening. But yeah, I don't really have any favorites for app companies, but I do. The two that I've worked with the most has been Dramabox and hang on, I have it right here.
Do
Dramabox
you
and
always know for which platform it gets shoot?
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they announced that even in the when I'm auditioning, I can see
Okay.
who it's. All right. Yeah, Dramabox and Drama Shorts.
Drama shorts, yeah.
Yeah. Those are my two that I've, but I'm on a lot of different ones, but those are the two that I've worked with more than anybody else.
Have you ever worked with Weglue or Candy Jar?
No, I haven't. I'm about to do one right
Because
now.
Candy Jar is in the audience. I'm doing every month a monthly recap episode also with this with the big review ladies. And Candy Jar 3 times in a row was the app of the month.
Okay.
Because Candy Jar drops so great stories and
I
so
know that
well
they're filming
produced.
another one. Stop.
Also Viglu stories are mostly based on real books. So the storyline is normally better than the typical, vertical trope story.
Sure.
So
Yeah.
these two
I
platforms
a
are
lot
really
of
good.
these, a lot of these, like, I just got a message this morning from somebody that they're like, why are you doing these stories about, like, man falls in love with cousin, or son's ex-girlfriend kind of stories. She's like, you've done like four or five of those. And I look back, I'm like, okay, of my 23 films, I guess I've done four or five of those. But what I do is I like to choose characters that challenge me. It's a storyline, even though it seems similar, each character is different. They're going through something completely different in their backstory. What they're struggling with psychologically or mentally is very interesting to me. So I like to, as an actor, just try and find stuff, because I get offered stuff a lot, and I'm grateful for that. I really am. But I really am in a position now where I can sort of pick and choose what stories and what characters challenge me. Can I really live this out truthfully? Is this something to dig deep and try to really portray and convince the audience? Because I don't want anyone to ever watch a movie that I'm in or see a performance I'm giving and think, oh, he's just acting. Let me see what the kids are up to. Let me see what time it is. I have to pay the bills. I need to go out and get some food, whatever. I want them to be so interested in my performance because I'm really living it out. For me, that's the great challenge. I want people to be on the edge of their seats seeing, whoa, I can't believe what I'm watching, what's going to happen next. That's always what I try to go into with this. It's, for me, it's not just acting and trying to make money and be famous. I really like the challenge of these insane, over-the-top stories. Can I really live them out?
Yeah, but
Because
that's important because sometimes you see exactly if the actor or the actress cannot identify with the role and did it
right.
just for the money in a case nothing better came up at that moment. And that's kind of for the audience, it's kind of shitty
Right.
because I don't know if you know it, but I'm also doing episodes with fans because I want to know what attracts fans to watch verticals. And a lot of fans lately told me that in the last few months, there were a lot of verticals they switched off, not finished watching. For example, because sometimes the storyline is so bad, or sometimes the acting is not good. And that's exactly what you were saying. For me, I'm not the type of super nerdy fern girl that says, okay, if, for example, a TJ Wig plays lead, the vertical is really good. No. For me, a great actor doesn't make a shit story good. So for me, it needs more points in a vertical where I'm looking at. Is the storyline good? Does the actor live his role and makes it believable or not? And also, did the post-production team a great job? Because
Yeah, see, that's the other thing.
we saw a few verticals where theoretically the story is good and the actor job is also good, but the post-production ruined it completely. Sound, music,
Oh man,
whatever.
that's the worst. I did one of those last year in December, actually, a year ago, here in LA. The sound quality was so bad. I don't know what happened. It was just very echoey, and a lot of the voices were kind of muffled in some cases. They overexposed the sound. Like, ooh, that was a little too loud. It didn't match the rest of the volume of the rest of the story. And even though the acting was maybe okay, I was just like, it's so distracting. I couldn't even finish it. And it was my movie. I'm like, I can't watch.
But
This
it
is
was
so.
very interesting. I had an episode recording lately with a post-production team from Vietnam. They are doing post-productions for Viglu. And we spoke exactly about the sound problem. And they asked me, are you watching verticals with earphones or not? Because when they are editing it, they are editing it with a speaker. And they learned by themselves when I talked to them, I'm watching it with earphones because I want this concentration on the sound and what they are saying and not all around me. And they said, huh, maybe we should do that also, make a check or a control with earphones in it. How is the sound then? And I said, yeah, that's a total different. If you're watching with speaker, maybe it's not too loud, but if you're watching it with earphones, with like my Apple AirPods did, with the noise distraction, it's very clear and loud. And then it's exactly the problem you said. Sometimes some sound is too loud, or maybe there were verticals where the background music was so loud that you cannot understand what the actors are saying.
I mean, like my, as I said earlier, though, my experience of actually making the movies on all these films have been great. But in post-production, and you see the movie come out, you're like, the sound is interesting. And in some
Interesting, that's a
cases,
good word.
in more cases than not, I'm like, why did they choose that take? Because I gave a better take in a previous,
Do
like,
you watch all your verticals?
I try to, because I want to make sure, do I have, because as an actor, you want to have a very strong acting reel, which is
Yes.
your presentation for producers, directors, casting people. It's a very important piece to showcase so you can do what you do. And so you want to always have in your reel your best quality work, always. At least that's the goal. And so in order for me to discover that, I have to go through my own films. And I look at it objectively. I'm not looking at it as, oh, that's me on screen. I'm so bothered.
I love
I'm
me.
like, no, I'm dissecting these scenes. Like, is this something that I would want to present to Steven Spielberg? That's the way I look at it. And I have a, I'm very, very critical, because I know great acting. I've studied it. I have watched so many of the old movies. It was part of my curriculum as my acting class. I had to study, I had to read, I had to watch the great actors. We had a whole list of films, over 100 movies to watch, and they were all the classic old movies that won Academy Awards. So I'm watching great films. I'm watching great directors, great actors do their best work. So I know, like, the quality of acting. that compels an audience. And that's what I try to look for in my in all of my films. Is there a piece of something that I can take and use that in my reel?
Do
And it
you
can be
watch
anything.
also verticals from other actors to see how they are doing, for example?
No, I don't really concern myself with other actors' performances. My job as an actor is not only just as a business person side of the acting business, is to find my best quality work. But as an artist, when I'm on set, my job is to work off the other person and give them the truth of what I'm really feeling based off their behavior. That's what my job is as an actor. Obviously, come in knowing my lines like I know my name. But I also, more importantly than the words, is the behavior. Anybody can say the words. If you don't have any behavior behind the words, that's why these people turn their apps off.
Yeah,
There's
that
they're done
is.
watching. Because there's no interesting behavior to compel the audience to stay connected. They don't
Yeah.
care about the words. They want to see, are you living this out? Are you making me feel something? And the only way you're going to do that is through behavior. So I'm always looking in my movies, do I have good, strong behavior that I can use that's different than maybe I already have on my reel, playing a different person or something that's stronger maybe than something I already have done, but it's a better quality kind of scene. I'm always thinking, like, as a business person, what can I present that's going to get me the job?
Does your partner watch your verticals?
She does sometimes. Yeah.
Is she critical? Or is she only, lovey-dovey, you're looking good.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't sit and watch them. Like, she's a very busy business person working with lots of people in her line of work. So when I'm watching my movies, it's usually when I'm alone. It's quiet, so that I can really focus and dissect. But I will show her clips of things that I think are strong. What do you think? And she's like,
Nope.
And I'm like, good, because she's not going to lie to me.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. To
She's
get open,
Romanian,
honest.
not a bullshitter. She'll tell me that. So yeah, so I'm and or she'll be like, oh yeah, that's really good. I'm like, I'm keeping it, and then I'll send it over to my agent and say, here's what I've been able to put together, and then I leave it up to them. I trust them, put the pieces together, and do their job. So, but yeah, it's a very interesting, crazy business.
Do you
Crazy.
reading
It's all around.
reviews?
I'm sorry.
Do you read fan reviews who got
Sometimes.
published so many on Instagram, for example?
Yeah, sometimes. And a lot of times they'll tag me, so it'll show up on my information, like, hey, you have a message, been tagged in something. So I'll read it. And the fan reviews honestly have been very, very nice, very favorable. I try to make sure that my work is favorable. I want my audience to feel something. I want them to enjoy what they're watching, escape their reality for however long. So to me, the reviews are they do they hold value to me. It lets me know, am I doing a good job or am I doing a bad job?
Yeah, but to be honest, there are not so many bad reviews because I spoke with all the review ladies and they said before they are doing a bad review, they don't review it.
Ah, interesting.
So
Interesting. Well,
the
it's
dark
my
market, you only get in our monthly recap episode, we are talking every month about the vertical crap of the month to disappointer of the month. Yeah, we speak open and honest about
Yeah.
it. But no, a lot of them told me that they don't publish any bad reviews or more worse reviews. Mostly nice reviews.
I haven't really seen any specific reviews on a person's performance in the major publications about what's happening in verticals, like in the Hollywood Reporter or the New York Times, big publications, a Washington Post, whatever. They are paying attention to the revenue, the success of the vertical space, which is destroying Hollywood, which is why Hollywood is now interested in these movies, because they realize, oh, these movies are making so much money.
Yeah,
So
it's
the
popping
audience
up.
appreciates these films. Even if perhaps the acting isn't Academy Award, quality, the fact is it's an escape, for the
Absolutely.
audience. And they enjoy this kind of escape. They want to look at attractive people going through shitty situations. And how are they going to work through it, one way or the other? You know? So it's not always about the performance. But as a performer, I want my performance to be as good as it can possibly be.
What has
Always.
changed since your first vertical shooting till your last one?
Obviously, my experience. I'm not nervous to perform. I was at first because it was all new, you know, taking me out of acting class where you perform on a stage, live in front of your audience, and you cannot make mistakes. You have to figure it out. If you forget your lines, you got to figure it out. There is no take three. You work it out and you learn how to get through that. But in a movie, you get takes. You can make mistakes and then reshoot. When I first started, my goal was to not make mistakes. So I was a little bit in my head about that. So it took me out of the scene. And that to me is a huge disservice to the other actor. I want to be connected so that they get a great performance out of me because that gives them something to really work off of rather than, oh, I hope I say my right, you know. But as I got more experience, I trusted the process of me being able to memorize lines and realized, dude, relax. It's okay if you flub a line or two. You know, it's granted if you have a person who's got the script and they're well, you said instead of they get that. Some of these people get that precise. So I wanted to make sure that I nailed it every time, so that was never an issue. And then the experience came, and now I'm able to do what they need me to do, say what they need me to say. So I'm a lot more relaxed in my work, and I enjoy it. I can like just enjoy being on set, giving the director whatever they need me to give them, with these specific notes of something that they want to really see specific in a certain scene, part of a scene. I can do that now without thinking about it and just enjoy it. So for me, it's just now I'm a lot more relaxed, a lot more experienced, a lot less nervous. And I just enjoy the creative process of it all. And when you do that, you discover things about yourself. You know, when you just let go of the I have to be good, I need to make the money, I want people to love me, I want the director to like me so I get hired again, all that that plays in your head. You got to throw all that out and just live in the moment, you know, truthfully. And when you do that, you're going to get your best work. And I realized that through working, that, you know, when you just really live it out truthfully, forget everything else, and you're just really connected to the other actor, you're going to get your best performance. And it's 10 times out of 10, that's the case.
And what keeps you so attracted doing verticals?
These stories are just so over the top and different. The characters that I read about that I'm to portray, they all have these deep underlying issues that I've, as a human being in my own reality, have never experienced before. So for me, I like to dive into work and characters that are really going through something and figure out, like, even if I don't relate to the exact thing, the challenge is, can you make up something in your imagination that taps you into that emotional state that you have to be in for that particular moment? In a lot of cases, it's very heightened. It's, you know, it's a heightened state of emotion, and that's the great challenge, is projecting that and making that truthful. So that's kind of what keeps me going in this genre. I love working. Plus, you know, the cameras are have a little limited space to work with vertically rather than horizontally, so you don't have a lot of movement. So it's a lot more focused on what's happening in your face. There's a lot, and when you watch Academy Awards, you know, the great actors and actresses that are being nominated for their performance, best actor, best actress, best supporting, but you know, it's always a close-up in their presentation of why they deserve this award. It's always a close-up. And in the vertical space, so many of these scenes are so close. And I really like that challenge too, because you can't fake it to make your audience believe. You can be a little bit more loose and fake, if you will, act when you're working with a wider angle, because it's not so much about your face, it's more about the behavior or the movement. But when they lock in on your face, man, you got to really be locked in and be emotional and pay attention, and to that other person and give them the truth of whatever that is. And
Are
I like that.
there any no-goes where you would decline a role?
I mean, obviously, frontal nudity. I don't think any of that's necessary in these stories. I would do it for a big film that was going to be like a nominated film that's telling a very compelling story where it would be reasonable. Like Joaquin Phoenix just did a film that just came out called Eddington. And it's towards the end of the movie. He was shot and stabbed in the head, and he's now like a vegetable. And his caregiver is has him naked, pulling him into the bathroom so he can take a crap or a piss in the toilet. And he's fully exposed. It's a full-on frontal, and it's Joaquin Phoenix doing this scene. So in something like that, yeah, I would do it. But I'm not gonna go like do a porno, in the movie Steven Spielberg, when he did Schindler's List. There's several scenes of massive amounts of people completely naked that are
know.
walking in line, because they're about to be murdered. Movie like that, absolutely. I would do that. But yeah, just a full on front nudity where I'm like making out with somebody. Like, it's not necessary for a person to see that. Less is more in that case.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also will not physically beat a woman. I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah.
I'll like maybe put my hands on her, choke her, shove her, but I'm not gonna flat out slap her across the face. I won't do that.
No.
Not in these films. It's not justified.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. I don't think I think there's things that are a little too we don't need to see. It's not necessary. It doesn't really this do the story any justice.
No. No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
TJ, we are already at the end, and at the end, I'm asking every time a five question quickie, everyone the same five questions. So, first one, what's your favorite dish?
Lasagna.
Do you have Italian roots? No.
No, just love meat lasagna or a cheeseburger.
Yeah, simple great cheeseburger. True. That's true. What kind of comfort movie do you have? What type of movie you have rewatched a few times?
Oh my goodness. Any of the Disney classic animated movies, those are always fun to watch.
The Disney one, really? I didn't
Yeah, oh
expect that
yeah.
from you, to be honest.
Yeah, even the live action Disney movies from like the 1960s and 70s are awesome. Anything that Peter Sellers did in Pink Panther. We talked earlier about, James Bond movies and Lord of the Rings. I really love those kinds of things as well. Very leisure, but beautiful films that were very well acted. I just appreciate good acting. Thing I watch, I like to be inspired by too. So I'm watching material that gets my spirits up and makes me excited as an actor. Like I'm ready. Like I'm emotionally available to do anything. I love movies that give me that feeling,
Yeah, that's good. And what type
Yeah.
of music gives you that feeling or a good mood?
Jazz.
Oh,
I
that's
love
great.
jazz. Smooth jazz, big band jazz. I'm a drummer. I've been playing drums my whole life, well, since I
Yeah,
was
I
two.
read about it. Yeah, that
Yeah.
you're. Do you still
Yeah.
playing the drums?
I do, yeah. I also learned keyboards back in 2005 and started making my own music. I've got two completed albums on
Really?
iTunes, Yeah, Spotify, YouTube.
I have to look
Yeah.
them up.
All original music,
I
and
didn't know
it's really
that.
like smooth jazz, happy-go-lucky
So
sound.
a music vertical would be good for you. A rock
Heck yeah.
star vertical.
I would love to play a drummer. I would kill it. It'd be so fun. I can play anything because of my background in jazz. My dad played drums. I wanted to be like my dad when I was a kid, so I
Oh,
learned how to
that's
play drums
good.
all by ear. I never was actually classically trained. I can just learn how to play by
A
listening
lot
and
of
just.
great musicians never learned it, really.
Yeah. All right.
They are
Yeah, it's kind of
mostly
weird.
the best.
Yeah, it's weird, but I can play like the Buddy Rich, the greatest jazz drummer in the that ever li lived. He's the most difficult drummer to learn from. I grew up playing to his records because that's what my dad played. greatest jazz drummers ever. If you can play jazz, you can pretty much play anything. And that goes for any instrument, not just
Okay,
drums.
so I get noted. We need a music vertical for you. Okay,
Yeah.
I work on it.
Drummer.
If someone comes up to you and said, "Listen, TJ, I want to start watching verticals. Which one of yours should I definitely have watched?" What would you say?
I mean, I'd want to give one with one of my strongest performances, which I think is my very first one, Her Desired Alphas. And then probably the other one would be one I just recently did, called Cuff to My Silver Fox Captain.
Do you know which platform this is?
Cuff to My Silver Fox plat is that one's on Flareflow.
Okay.
And then Her Desired Alphas is on Reelshort. Another one that people really like is called, and I love the title, Don't Deport My Luna. Love that title. I think that one's on Mini Shorts.
You did a lot of Werewolf One, didn't you?
Yeah. Did a lot of werewolf
Did
ones, a
you
lot of
Mafia
women.
One?
I'm doing one in New York. And I've done two mafia stories. But this one is my first one where I actually play the lead. The other two mafia ones are I
The
was
Don.
not the Don.
Not the Don. Okay.
I'm just like the lead main mafia guy that's featured
Okay.
in this. Yeah.
Okay.
And
Excited about that.
I'm a bad. I'm lo I cannot wait to take this one on.
To
This is
be a
very
bit
different.
bad. Yeah,
Yeah. No matter
I
what,
think
you're a
that's
good
good
guy.
because so when you played a lot of nice leads, I think that type of switching is really good.
Yeah. I always have believed and have learned from people that have played like serial killer villains, main like very successful actors. One trick to be able to pull it off to play such a bad guy is you're always on your own side. You believe you're the good guy,
Yeah.
and the good guy is the bad guy.
Yeah.
You believe your own circumstances, your way is the right way.
I was told that a few times by a lot of villain actors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You have to
Yeah.
be on your side. You can't think of yourself as a bad guy. That's the death trap.
Yeah.
Because now you're not believing your circumstances, and
Yeah.
therefore your audience can't believe it if you don't believe it.
True. Totally
Yeah. I
true.
mean, look at Jack Nicholson when he played the Joker, or
Oh, yeah.
Heath Ledger played even a more darker version of the Joker,
Yeah.
or Joaquin Phoenix, his Joker version. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like
You have to
all
live the
three of them,
role
very
always.
different types of serial killer Jokers, but they all played their truth to it and believed every single circumstance they were in throughout that whole movie. It was amazing. Yeah.
Last question, which genre you wanna see more or play more? Maybe a new genre in the verticals?
That's a good question. I mean, I know they're exploring lots of different things now. I guess I'd like to see more action thriller type films. I know they're harder to shoot. They require a much larger budget, because of the action stunts, and there's a
Yeah.
lot of things going on in those movies. But I'd like to see a little bit more of that, but with good quality storytelling behind it, not
Yeah.
just do a front flip and do a kick. I want to know
The
why are they doing it? Like, what's the motivation?
reason. Yeah.
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 Something really strong, Something really strong. Those are hard to
That's,
pull off, but
yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to
But
be in the
never say
and find
never.
Yeah.
Let's see what 2026 will bring because I think we are still at the beginning of this vertical stuff.
We are definitely still at the beginning. I mean, it's constantly going to grow. I don't think it's going to die out anytime soon,
No.
especially now that Hollywood's got their attention on it.
Yeah.
I know Disney, Hulu, I think Netflix, Amazon Prime, they're really taking a very serious look at putting their own vertical content up on their platforms.
Yeah.
So it's not going anywhere.
So maybe we can speak again in 2 or 3 years, and then we talk about your, I don't know, 18th vertical or whatever. And the 78th lead role or stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah, fun. We'll see what
I
happens in 2 years.
TJ, I thank you a lot for your time. It was a
Thank you
pleasure
very
talking
much.
to you.
Yes, it was so much fun.
And
Thank you.
have so many fun on your on your upcoming projects, and
Thank you.
maybe we will see you as a rock star one day. Who knows?
Let's hope, right?
I will watch it. Truly. I will watch it. So thank you very much, TJ. Have a nice
Thank you.
day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
This is a wrap on this episode, and I hope you tune in again.